I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. And this is one of the pieces of music that has inspired one of the most prolific and hard-to-categorize choreographers in modern dance, Garth Fagan. This is 16th-century vocal music by the Spanish composer Cristobal de Morales, accompanied by Jan Garbarek improvising on the soprano sax. That combination of old, new, expected and unexpected from a grab bag of the world's cultures, that in some way describes modern American life. It's also the mix that makes Garth Fagan's choreography hard for reviewers to describe. Lithe, energized doodles is one reviewer's attempt. Garth Fagan was born in Kingston, Jamaica, the son of a prominent educator. He heard Vivaldi at home, reggae on the streets. Himself a professional dancer since his teens, he's had his own company since he was 30. He has a Tony Award for choreographing The Lion King on Broadway. And I've read he also has a percentage of the gate. So he could retire, but he isn't. Garth Fagan is a missionary for modern dance. Connection listeners, when you hear those words, modern dance, do you think of your worst nightmare in gym class? Or are you a missionary too? And where is dance today? Is it in trouble? Or is it in the ascendancy? Join us online at theconnection.org or call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Joining me in the studio is Garth Fagan. Welcome.
Hi, Dick. Glad to be here.
That's nice to have you here. Now, I said that you'd started your company when you were 30, and you've been at it 31 years?
So I'm a grandfather who's 61, soon to be 62.
Do you get the same thrill from dance, from coaching dancers, that you did 30 years ago?
Yes. It's a little bit more difficult because the dancers now are better trained technically, but spiritually and philosophically, they're not as well trained. I mean, in the good old Martha Graham Albanelli days, you knew why you were dancing. They insisted that you did a movement just so to represent whatever the intellectual idea was. Nowadays, dancers just want to throw up the legs and spin and jump, and the meaning is not that important to them. And their history is very limited because of lack of proper liberal arts education. You know, you say Hitler and they say who? You know, you say, Vietnam War, whatever. You know, it's all passé. They want only the current stuff. And as a dance teacher, educator, and artist, I have to fight that with every inch of my strength.
When you began, your company was called the Bottom of the Bucket Butt Dance Company. Is that accurate?
It's accurate and much forgotten by me. It was the 70s and everybody had catchy names, you know.
But one of the things that you were doing then, Garth, was that you were bringing dance to inner city kids. That was part of what you wanted to do when you started the company, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And I started with dancers who had had no previous dance training, which Albanelli and everybody said was suicidal. And I said, well, we're at the bottom of the bucket now, but watch where we're going to go. And as the years passed on, it was too much print, too much ink, so we just dropped it and it's Garth Fagan Dance.
Is the theory that you brought to trying to teach dance to those kids who didn't have the traditional, the classical training, is that still a part of what they call the Fagan technique? They put that in capital letters. You know that.
Good.
The Fagan
technique. Hooray. It's about time, 30 years. Yes, it still is a part of that because I believe in the concept of people dancing as opposed to dancers trying to portray people. By dancers trying to portray people, I mean in the old days, if you were a dancer, you had to, you know, stop a bus or pick up a dime in a very dancerly fashion. Now, I just want regular ma, pa, cousin, uncle picking up a dime or doing a movement. In Africa, you have communities that dance, from kids, toddlers, through great-grandparents. You know, everybody dances, you know, and other cultures, of course. Whereas here, we're a little bit more limited. It's always the 30-year-old dancers and the 40-year-old doctors and the 25-year-old lawyers. Everybody kind of parties together in little groups. I wanted this idea of a regular human being dancing, doing fabulous virtuosic stuff, but not in a virtuosic fashion, not expecting applause from the audience, say, oh, look how fabulous I am. It's just that I just did, three tours in the air, and landed in a very soft, quiet arabesque.
But you're no softer as a taskmaster.
No.
You expect the same precision that a ballet coach would from your modern dancers.
Absolutely. And that's been part of our success, because one critic, New York Times, said we move with the speed and precision of ballet dancers, which is important to me, because when I was creating my technique and my company, I wanted them to have the speed and precision from ballet, the grounded floor work of modern dance, and the polyrhythms of African and Caribbean dance. I mean, that was a mix that interested me, that I liked, And I've done pieces for lots of ballet companies, Dance Theater Harlem, New York City Ballet. So I've had to work with people who are beautifully classically trained. I mean, New York City Ballet dancers, DTH dancers, they're fabulous. And they had to do my stuff, and they did wonderful jobs with it.
I read some comments by people who are in your company, and mm-hmm. They all said, I saw that video and I had to go to Rochester. I had to say, let me in the company. And obviously the ones who said that and are in the company were allowed in by you. But let's put me on the stage. I'm one of these dancers. Mm-hmm. I've said to you, Garth Fagan, there's something in what you do that makes me want to join the company. Mm-hmm. If you let me in, what do you expect of me? What do you tell that dancer day one? What are your expectations?
The hardest one is discipline. Discipline to take two classes a day so that the body is prepared technically for any of my demands, so that they can perform brilliantly and fluidly for the audience who bought tickets, got babysitters, got a train to get there, and rearrange your day to come to the show. So I love to go into a theater where the artists are prepared to give to the people who gave up some money that they could have used to go to dinner or someplace else. So that discipline and discipline to repeat it until you get it right. And even when you've gotten it right in the studio, there's no guarantee that on a certain day at 9:20 in the evening, those ankles aren't going to say, oh, and you lose a releve or you lose a balance, But the discipline will allow you to correct it as speedily as you can and then dazzle the audience with something fabulous right after. Because it's live performances by live human beings, so there will be problems and mistakes will occur. But the talented, the brilliant, solve them immediately and as effortlessly as possible. And don't beat themselves up, I made a mistake. No, leave it and move on to the next fabulous thing that you can do. I expect them not just to be knowledgeable of dance. I want them to understand art in all its forms, because that can give them energy as they perform. Understand, painting, sculpture, poetry, theater, the whole bit. Politics, what's happening in politics. Just be bright, intelligent dancers, and I'm very proud of mine. They really are.
Now, you're edging into the area of choreography, and because they can be everything that they can be, but you've got to direct them. We're going to just listen to a little bit of music here. This is a piece of music by John Adams.
Oh, yeah.
You know it well.
I know it well. I know John well. He's a fabulous composer.
I want to just keep it in the background if I can,
okay.
Garth, and have you tell me what goes through the mind of a choreographer as you're listening to this, trying to imagine how you will animate human beings to this mm-hmm. music.
Well, first of all, I love the music, and I listen to it several times before I decide that I love it. I might be attracted to the music, but upon further investigation, I might not like it or appreciate it. This music I've listened to zillions of times, and I love. It's contemporary. It's contemporary without being cheap. It's contemporary with real form, structure, and some rhythms to die for, using electronic scores and an electronic score. So I have to see what can I add to this, which will illuminate it, illuminate my work, my dances, my choreography, and not detract from the music, but at the same time not be a slave to the music. The old-fashioned days of choreography, 400 years old, whatever the music said, that's what the dancer did, and they were totally in sync, music and dance. Since the 60s, we've gotten away from that. And now I have to comment on the music as a jazz musician would. You know, one artist plays a saxophone, and then the next guy on the trumpet comments on it and adds something new to it. I do the same thing in
life. So even if it's got this wonderful rhythm to it, you could just as easily be having a dancer all by herself, standing in the center of the stage, not moving at all.
Perfectly still. She could be perfectly still, or she could be tripling the rhythms that John gave me, or she could be dividing the rhythms that John gave me, you know. And then for a wonderful moment, they could both be together. And then you say, now I can rest. And then the work starts again. And that's what I find most interesting in choreography, which is why my use of music is so varied. In this piece, which is my latest piece, Music of the Line, Words of the Shape, I use this section of John's music, which is electronic, and there's another section which he did to an acoustical score that he did much later, in about, say, 10 years later than this one. And I got his permission while he was on tour in Europe to use both. So maybe later we can hear the other section. But the contrast between the contemporary electronic and the beautiful adage that goes on in the other score is, like, amazing.
You came to the United States a young man, you went to Detroit, you were attracted to Motown, you brought some of the Afro-Caribbean with you. Is it all a part of what Garth Fagan does now?
I think so. I really think so. I mean, all the accumulation of experiences that have occurred to me in my life, they're in my work. That's a good place to start from, doing something that you know, or something that you would like to know about, so you investigate choreographically, but you've never necessarily experienced that, you know. But yeah, a lot of that Motown, I mean, Detroit in the 60s, and Motown was to die for, you know. I mean, convertibles and the beat carrying on, oh, wow. I mean, that was an amazing experience, and it is there somehow.
Connection listeners, what would you like to know about the construction of dance inside the mind of Garth Fagan? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. You don't get this kind of opportunity very often. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection on NPR. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. My guest in the studio, Garth Fagan, founder and artistic director of Garth Fagan Dance. And Garth, the music we're listening to is the one that you referred to a couple of minutes ago. This is,
yes,
John Adams again.
Yes, and this is acoustic, though. Real violins and real instrument. Listen to that. I mean, it still gives me goosebumps. And this is the middle section of the piece that I did. And it's three trios, and it's so refreshing and calming after the electronic score that you heard, and it, of course, ends with an electronic score. But these are trios where I explore different body types. Like the first trio is for Christopher Morrison, Norwood Pennywell, and Natalie Rogers. And there are 2 6-foot-4 men and a woman who's 5'2". And she runs the show. And it's so beautiful to see what they do with their bodies to make it work. Then the next section is a trio for 2 women and 1 man. And the 2 women are tall and the man is tall, so everybody's on the same page, you know, but not in what they do. And the last trio is for 2 men and 1 woman, and they're all shorter people, say 5'6", 5", you know, 5'5", 5'6". So it's more harmonious what they do. But again, trios are difficult, and I love trios, and my life's a trio.
You actually did, you wrote a piece once very much about your family, where the opening piece was about your father,
right,
the closing piece was about your mother.
Right.
I think I was reading that you wrote a piece once about your first wife that didn't go over that well with her when she saw it for the first time.
She grew since, and she loved it. The truth sometimes hurts.
It goes back to what you were saying a little while ago. You start with, you work with what you know. But I mean, those are just personal relationships. How do you turn that into something on the stage?
Through experimentation, because I'm very well known for my experiments. I mean, most times they're successful, sometimes they're god-awful, and you say, what was he thinking about? First of all, I work on my body, and my body's not exactly what you'd call a dancer's body anymore. I am a grandfather. And I work on my body, and then I see what I want to do with the movement, then I take it into the studio, and Norwood Pennywell and Natalie Rogers, who are my assistants, they have exquisite bodies and fabulous minds, and they're both Bessie Award winners, too.
Norwood's been with you over 20 years.
23 years, yeah. And I mean, he's, like, incredible. But anyway, I show them the movement, and then I sculpt it on their bodies because they can do things that I can no longer do, I sometimes never could do. And then there are things that I can still do that they can't do. that just enchants them, and we have a wonderful time sculpting it in their body and taking experiments, trying different lines, different structures, different rhythms, to come up with new movement and dance, movement invention. Whenever a critic goes crazy over my movement invention, I'm very pleased, because that's one of the most important things, because it's my responsibility as an artist creating today to push the art form forward so that youngsters have something else to do.
Are these the grand days of modern dance? I mean, if we look at it through the lens of what's happening on Hollywood, there was your Lion King, which continues. There's Rent, there's Stomp, there's Bring in the Noise, there's Contact. These are all pieces that at least place a fairly high value on the dance content in the musical. And I know that some of them may fit more into the conventional forms that you try to get away from, but there's a lot of dance out there. Is that encouraging to you, or
it's very encouraging to me. And Lion King broke the mold, the Broadway show, for dance on a Broadway show, because from the very beginning to the end, everybody dances, scenery dances, you know, animals, human beings, what have you.
But it's different. I mean, it's not, let's stop talking, let's dance now.
No.
You dance people through the entire story.
Through the entire story. It's very fluid. And with Julie Taymor, the director, a wonderful director, she loved that too, because she loves dance, you know. So it's a brand new way. And I use concert dancers who had been to college and were trained in different dance fields, because what I wanted to do was to use all different dance types in there. So a kid coming into the theater could plug into modern dance, ballet, African dance, hip-hop.
But what do I get as a viewer, which is different? If you choose not to put up the sort of, I mean, you often refer to them as the kind of TNA, you know, cha-cha-cha Broadway musical dancers. What do I get that's different if you put a concert dancer in a production like that?
You get better line. You get more complex rhythms. You get more interest in stage spacing. you know. And you get metaphor. You get more metaphor, you know, saying this is a lioness's hunt, for instance, and these are gorgeous women dressed in silk. I mean, make that be a lioness hunt, you know. So you get more metaphor in your imagination. Roam some more. Now, I love traditional Broadway dancers, but this was a new experiment to do something new and fresh. And it's playing in 6 shows around the world, sold out. So
you must be proud.
Very proud, very proud. In whatever language I see it, in Japanese, it's done all in Japan, German, it's done all in German, but the dancing is pagan, and that's very important.
Connection listeners, my guest is Garth Fagan. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And we're going to Newton, Massachusetts. Anne is joining us on the line. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Mr. Fagan. I wanted to know what you thought about helping to make dance more accessible in public education. For example, I don't know if you've heard about students who may have a diagnosis of ADD. They have poor impulse control. They have tremendous amounts of energy, and we don't see it. It's not being offered in public schools. As a matter of fact, there are cutbacks in this kinds of thing.
Do you have any experience with that yourself, then, using dance?
I do. Yeah. I do, and I actually am happy to say I'm 56, and I was able to take classes with Martha Graham and Alvin Ailey. And I missed it terribly, and I loved it, and I wanted to be a dancer. And what I realized now is that it was that opportunity to move and to learn to love to move that helped get me through. And, you know, I didn't have it in public school. I had it privately. But why isn't this happening in public schools?
I think it is an absolute disgrace that we're not teaching youngsters about dance, period, and about the arts.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're young and they have all this energy and all this creativity and all these things that they want to investigate, it's the perfect time to open the doors to them. My parents insisted that I was introduced to the arts as a kid. I hated it because I had to sit still and be quiet. It wasn't dance. It was more music and drama and poetry. But what I learned from it was, immeasurable. And pretty soon they were punishing me by not taking me to concerts. And I didn't know when that happened. But we really have to fight somewhere to have more arts education in all the public and private schools. Because this teaches kids about creativity, how to make a shoebox into an airplane or a jet or whatever they want to do with it. Now the kids get toys that all have batteries and all do exactly what they want them to do, and that's it. So the creative spirit of the child is being harnessed.
Well, look at the education system. When I was at school, we could take art and music. Dance wasn't there. When my daughter went to school, she had to choose art
or
music.
And she was lucky.
And she never had a crack at dance.
Right.
But the point that Anne's making is that at a time when these kids have all this bottled up energy because they're sitting watching so much television or playing video games or playing with their battery-controlled toys, wouldn't it be just the perfect way to go?
Absolutely the perfect way to go. And we have very qualified, talented teachers who can do it. It's just that the systems say, we don't need this anymore. And it's so sad. And that's why kids are doing the horrible things they're doing now, because they have no place to go during times of tension or pressure, no creative, quiet, beautiful places to go. And please keep fighting, Anne, and I do, as you know.
And thanks a lot for your call.
You're welcome.
It reminds me of something that I was thinking about last night. If someone wants to go and see dance right now, quite often the chance would be to see your company perform as they're constantly on the road, or to go to the Lion King, which, you know, could cost a family $300 or $400. Is that a part of what creates distance between people getting access to dance and learning what it could do, because it is kind of an expensive venture for a family?
It is expensive, but, you know, when I was in New York City, I saw so many shows from the Nosebleed Place, which is not $100. They're like $20. I mean, in the L.A. company, they're $12 seats or something like that. So if you really want to go, you can go. And sure, you won't have the great seats. That orchestra seats are just wonderful because you see the animals coming down the aisle and you can see, you know, all the good stuff. But you can still experience it from the third balcony. at lesser price, and at a movie ticket price or two or twice of the amount movie ticket. But you're seeing live human beings performing with all the wonder and frailty of live human beings. You know, it's not a movie that's been edited and cleaned up and whatever. You know, anything could happen, and it does sometimes.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And Sandra's joining us from Hingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Garth. It's Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Real good.
Good.
And, you know, they have telephones. You guys don't need to use a radio.
I just had to call because I'm so thrilled that Boston is having an opportunity to see Garth's company. It's his dances are like nobody else's. They are marvelous. Let me tell you, he was talking about...
Why, okay, Sandy, I'm putting you to work here. Tell me why.
Well, it's a reflection of the man. To see his company dance is to know Garth. It's the beauty, the grace, and the substance, the ideas that underlie the dances. It's never just beautiful movement. It's always grounded in deep and beautiful ideas.
That's very well put. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Sandy, it was nice to have you on.
Okay.
You
Bye
guys
then.
Can talk on the phone later. Get caught.
She's a great actress.
1-800-423-8255. And we're going to Durham, North Carolina. Gary, you're on The Connection. Hi.
Hi there. I just wanted to call and say that, and it's a nice follow-up to Sandy's call. I don't know you, but I did see you on the national tour last year at East Carolina University. And I just wanted to say that it was the most incredible experience. And as I told the screener, I would go anywhere now. I would thumb, I would get a bus or whatever to go see your company, as would my wife. And folks who haven't seen you or are listening to this and wonder about modern dance, I would say anybody should go and their lives would be almost changed.
Gary, we're a radio program. I need you to give me a visual picture. You're sitting there, you're watching Garth Fagan dance. What is it about the performance that, or dance in general, that means so much to you?
Well, it is the combination of both the music and the incredible movement, as he has been saying, Garth, as you've been saying, that what the individual human beings that are part of his company are capable of doing in terms of movement, blending that with the music, it just takes your breath away, and it's always unexpected and at the same time surprising and amazing and beautiful all together. You're not sure you're watching people of this earth when they dance.
Thank you, Garrett. It's a beautiful compliment. So you saw the premiere of the John Adams piece in Durham, I suppose. Was it this summer that you saw us?
Well, actually, I think you came to Durham maybe afterwards. This was when you were down in eastern North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
You made your way up the triangle.
Yeah. It was a long tour. Yeah, but thank you ever so much. And it's so important to get audiences that plugged into what's happening on the stage. So as you sit there in your seat, you can sense and feel what's going on and enjoy it and hopefully carry it with you for weeks, months, or years when you get into a positive or negative situation.
Thanks
well,
for
just one last comment. I think the audience would have sat there all night if you all would have been capable of performing all night.
Yeah, I know. These 3 and 4 encores, we have to stop. In Germany, they kept us on stage for 6 encores. Okay.
Thanks for your call, Gary.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You know, there are artists, Garth, who really couldn't give a hoot what the audience has to say. You know, I'm up here. I'm doing it. It's good because I say it's good. And if you don't like it, you know, you can leave at the intermission. I don't get the sense that you're that kind of artist. This kind of feedback matters. It means something to you?
For artists who feel that way, we do work for ourselves first. So let's not kid anybody. When I choreograph dances, they have to please Garth Fagan first. So I understand that. And sometimes when I'm taking risk or doing new things, the audiences or the critics might not get it. That's okay. I know what I'm doing and I'm going to keep working on it until it becomes more clear. But to be that narcissistic to think that what you do is what it is or what it ought to be, that's an very immature person. And I don't even know if you could call him a real artist because you you want to get the work right. You want to get it better. You want to get the sculpture more startling, more fluid, more whatever it is that you're working on. But you work at it to get it improved. And that kind of narcissism is passé. And the careers never last very long. They really never do that way because people want to be challenged. And one of the things about dance...
People, you mean the dancers or the people that...
The audience. Yeah. The dancers, too, otherwise yeah, they will not stay with you because they can't keep doing the same old all the time. They have to be challenged. But when you get beyond the physical beauty of a dancer or complex rhythms, when you get something that... speaks to your intellect, that speaks to your emotions, and that is an added blessing. When you can remember something that occurred in your life that this echoes or celebrates, then I think it's great art does that, and it does that for me. I can go into a gallery and look at a painting on the wall, and boy, where it'll take me, which the artist probably didn't have necessarily in mind. But my life experience allows me to interpret this painting in such a way. And the same thing should go for good choreography.
I remember reading a New York Times article by Anna Kiselgoff, who began her piece by saying, "The genius is in the details."
Thank her ever so much. And the details are annoying, bothersome, troublesome to me and the dancers. No, you know, 1/10 of an inch to the right, so much higher, so much lower, so much, you know. But the details are so important because lots of people can do the broad strokes. Lots of people can do that, but the details tell you that you're looking at Fagan, you know, you're looking at Taylor, you know, you're looking at any other choreographer of substance. And that's important. And something else that we have to learn is that just as we have variety in music, we have variety in dance and in choreography. And one day you might feel like Fagan, another day you might feel like Cunningham. And, you know, it's about we all work hard at our craft, but we should have our own distinctive voices. So when you see Fagan, you know that's Fagan. And that's important to me, with the pluses and the minuses.
Connection listeners, his name is Garth Fagan. He's one of our finest dancers. There's a little bit of music that he choreographed. Griot, New York, from thing you did with Marsalis,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, Wynton Marsalis.
Our number's 1-800-423-8255. If you'd like to talk with Garth Fagan, that's the number to write down. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection on NPR. This is The Connection on National Public Radio. And this is music that Garth Fagan uses in a piece that he's choreographed called Woza. It's a composition, Garth Fagan, by Le Bohème, is that right?
Le Bohème, uh-huh.
The same fellow...
Who did the choral work and lots of the compositions for Lion King on Broadway. He's South African and a genius, and he did the score for me. And this particular section is from a section called Forced Voyage. Woza in Zulu means come. And I did this piece called Woza, which is come, and we had four different sections. The first section, come prepared, a solo for a woman. The second section, come forever. A couple who have been in love and living for years, you know. And then this third section, come forced voyage, which alludes to slavery or alludes to anything that you have been forced to do that you don't want to do. You know.
Now take us to imagination, then. What are we seeing as we hear this music?
We're seeing dancers, I mean, really packed tightly on the stage, on the floor, as they would have been in a ship's hold. But at the same time, you get wonderful pulsing movements of a ship moving and fluid. So you have that problem of, is it negative, is it positive, or what is it? Okay. And
let's listen a bit.
Okay.
You You have a lot of fun with this, don't you?
I have a lot of fun with it. And in Zulu, she's saying, I want to see the moon. So you can imagine being enclosed where you cannot see anything but darkness, you know. And it's not negative. It doesn't put blame on anyone. And as a community, they come together, because that's what has happened. We've gotten the Maya Angelous and the Colin Powells by way of slavery. So it ends up being as positive as one can be about something as atrocious as that.
1-800-423-8255 to talk with Garth Fagan. And we're going to Clarksville, Virginia. Helen, you're on The Connection. Oh, I'm wrong. Patty from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yes.
Are you there?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. It's so enjoyable to hear Mr. Fagan's enthusiastic talking about dancing. I have a comment and a question. When I was in school in the 40s, a private school in New York City, all the girls took Isadora Duncan dancing. And I would like to know his thoughts on Isadora Duncan.
Well, she was a revolutionary in her time. She said, you know, away with the shoes, away with the fourth positions. Let's be free. Let's be more fluid.
Right.
Let's use different types of music for that day and age. She was incredible.
Do you still feel her influence? Do you think she has a lot to do with dancing today, or has had?
I still do, starting with bare feet. We dance in bare feet. You know,
right.
we can afford shoes, and we have some dances with shoes that we do. But the freedom of the metatarsals of those five toes on the floor is incredible,
yes.
you know.
Yes.
And she did that. And her lyricism still exists in my work and in other great work. No, she's
right.
invaluable, absolutely invaluable.
Right. That, for a child, it was wonderful because there was no right or wrong.
Right.
And so you were told to be a flower or a tree or an ocean wave, and whatever way you did it was correct. It was your expressiveness.
It was your expressiveness and your interpretation and your voyage to that place that was important.
But
to
you
Isadora.
Put the discipline in. You're the one who says, yeah, there is a right and wrong.
Martha did before me. And Balanchine did before me. You know, and Alvin did before me. Yes, but now, in this day and age, we have right and wrong. We sometimes do improvisations and even enough improvisations where the dancers can do what they want. But when you see the kind of complex stage spacing I use, if they did what they wanted, we'd have disasters.
They'd kill each other.
Kill each other on stage, you know. But in the classroom, in the studio, in rehearsals, then you can bring that expressiveness to it.
Patty, thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks, Patty.
1-800-423-8255. And... Helen, Clarksville, Virginia. Are you there now?
Yeah, I'm here.
My mistake before. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. You know, I was listening to the previous caller, and they were talking about, you know, personal expressivity or whatever.
Right.
And I wanted to say that some of the most beautiful, fluid dancing that I've experienced has been right there on the dance floor at a party, and most recently with trance. And I was wondering how modern dance done in the clubs influences our guest and his choreography, and whether he draws inspiration from that or whether he takes part in that himself and finds artistic expression in that.
He doesn't win any more prizes for dancing like he did when he was a much younger man, but he still enjoys dancing at parties. And my grandkids and my dancers bring in whatever the latest craze is. And most times it's wonderful. Sometimes it's a little bit too banal for me, or I can't get it. But that's okay. As we mature, we sometimes lose sight of it. But I come from a family where great-grandparents of 96 and whatever were always partying, so I'm going to stay as young as I can forever. But I have to take into consideration the maturing things that I've experienced in life and put them into the stew also. But please dance on. It's very important, and it's good for you as far as health is concerned also.
Yeah, it's wonderful to go to these gatherings, I guess you'd call them, and just watch everyone. Now, you were saying if all your dancers were on stage, it'd be just complete chaos if everyone was doing their own improvisation. But to go to a club and watch, you know, in particular trance, to watch each person interpretate, you know, the music in this kind of fluid movement, and it's really a beautiful thing. And there's there's a coherence in a way, the way all the people move.
Absolutely.
But yet it's not choreographed, and that's gorgeous, I think.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's wonderful and life-affirming, and let's keep it. We need, dance is a very broad, wide spectrum, and I love it all, from folk dance, ballet, whatever. Just keep dancing, please.
I don't know about you, Helen, but if I was at a party and people started to dance and Garth Fagan got up and started to dance, I'd sit down.
You'd probably leave and scream.
Do you like the kind of, no, it's not do you like it, but do you learn from that kind of reaction to the music that Helen's talking about seeing in a club? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess I could learn from it, but I've seen it. You know, the beat is there, and that's what drives everything. And nowadays, with techno being as important as it is, it's dung, 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 you know. So for me, I want to move to something a little bit more complex, but it's a very valid form, and it gives me dancers, and the communal thing that she's talking about is so important.
Okay, 1-800-423-8255. Helen, thanks for your call. We're going to Potsdam, New York. Lisa's joining us. Hi, Lisa.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about how the studio is very sacred. Because when you come in, I've done some dancing before. In fact, I studied under Trudy Cobb, who had
danced with me.
With you. Yes, mm-hmm. And that influenced me to go on to dance for my younger days. Anyway, how you kind of strip down and you're just there, you're exposed and you're opening yourself up to different experiences. And when you leave the studio, it's sort of like you grow. And each time you come in, you're growing as a person.
It's the vulnerability, Lisa. Before I start a rehearsal, I tell the dancers, leave all the negativity outside. On the stairs, in the elevator, do not bring it into the studio. So you had a rough day, so the bird died, whatever. Try and pull it together and dig deeply into yourself, and now listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to your body. Place your body exactly where you want to put it, where you're instructed to put it. And enjoy. And it is a very cleansing feeling. I know what you're talking about. You can get out of a good class, a good rehearsal, and you're exhilarated.
Yeah.
And it's hard to go to sleep because of that level of excitement that you've achieved. But it also is celebrating the self and celebrating the body. Because even when you feel aches or pains, you know what that's about. Hopefully it's just muscle ache and pain, and it will go away. And we're not talking about injury. But the classroom experience is very important, and one critic said my dancers were monastic in class because everybody is focused and concentrated,
mm-hmm.
and no hostile vibrations. My first dance teacher, Ivy Baxter, used to tell that to me, hostile vibrations, and then I was saying, what is she talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know, alas, what she's talking about.
That's exactly what Trudy used to say. Put it in a jar and leave it there. And
yeah.
If you want to pick it back up when you walk out, that's
your
up to
problem.
You.
But
that's your problem.
Yeah.
But if they brought that into the classroom, these children would not have so much frustration. They'd be able to express themselves.
Right.
And deal with their issues and with themselves.
And they'd have a structure in which to do it, to develop it or divide it. But keep plugging for that, though. More dance in education, more arts in education.
Lisa, thanks a lot for your call. We're going to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and Noelle. Hi, Noelle.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I'm wanting everyone to know that I'm so delighted to hear Garth on the radio. In North Carolina, we have dance education as part of our basic education plan, and we have many certified dance educators in the schools. I'm the National Dance Educator of the Year this year, and
congratulations.
Thank you. I wanted to say on a personal note that it gives such credence to the fact that dance is for everyone to get my children to observe your videos, and we haven't had the chance to see you perform personally, but I teach a great deal of young men in the 6th through 8th grade, and when they see Garth and Garth's company, they believe that it's just fine to dance. It's not particularly in the reserve of the female, but that young men can express themselves, they can show vulnerability and a tenderness and a quality of just sort of participation that isn't allowed in American society very frequently.
Thank you ever so much, and that's very important to me, that we have virile males on the stage.
Noel, thanks a lot very much for your call.
You're welcome, and thanks for having Garth on the show.
Let's hear a little music here.
Oh, this is Level M. This is from Come Celebrate in Woza. We end the show with this, and we end the piece with this, because I'm very suspicious of people who cannot celebrate. You know, you got to have weddings, bar mitzvahs, or whatever, anniversaries, graduations. You got to celebrate the hard work you put into whatever it is that you did. And it's an incredible dance. And
you know what happens, though, when you have a kind of celebratory finish to a performance, as you will tonight and this weekend, with music.
At the Emerson Majestic Theater in Boston.
Exactly. Then you just leave people wanting more. You're worried about the second and the third encore. You know, you need a real down piece of music. Get them all depressed.
I can do that, too. I can do that. I've done some of those. But now, as a country, we need to celebrate some. We need to get it back up after 9/11. We need to get it back up and moving.
Do you feel you have a responsibility in that?
Oh, yeah. And we're doing a piece tonight in memoriam that's dedicated to the survivors and victims of that tragedy, to a score by Cristobal de Morales, a 16th century composer.
That's the same piece of music that we began the program with.
Right, yeah. So you have the ups and the downs in there.
It's a fascinating art form that you're in, because you just do go from such extremes of emotion, from, you know, having tears rolling down people's cheeks to that kind of celebration at the end.
And sometimes tears of joy. Those are the best kind, you know, where you can't, especially us as men, and we're not supposed to cry.
No, we don't ever cry, right?
And I'd just like to say hi to Lou Lasagna, the first chairman of my board, who lives here in Boston and works at Tufts. What a wonderful man, and he set me off.
And it's wonderful to have had you in the studio for this hour. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Dick. Went fast.
Garth Fagan, founder and artistic director of Garth Fagan Dance. Connection listeners, Garth Fagan Dance performs throughout the weekend at Emerson Majestic Theater in Boston. You can continue this conversation, look at some pictures of Garth Fagan dancers in action on our website. We're at theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Schugertz. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon, dancing out of here. This is The Connection. Musiyakam.